The Disciplined Investor is underwritten by Interactive Brokers. Interactive Brokers charges U.S. dollar margin loan rates from 0.75 to 1.59%. Rates, of course, are subject to change. Learn more at ibkr.com/compare. And this episode is also sponsored by Masterworks.io, where you're invited to join an exclusive community investing in blue chip art at Masterworks.io.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Another $1.9 trillion in stimulus deal is in the works. Major markets slipped for the week as employment concerns are slipping back towards the 1 million initial claims per week. Earnings season begins. We have listener questions and so much more. All this and much more on episode number 697 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Hello out there in podcast land. This is Andrew Horowitz, and thanks for joining me, for listening. As you're, I don't know, maybe you're working, you're exercising, you're driving, or maybe it's just to help you fall asleep. Whatever it is, thank you for listening. And again, as a formal introduction, I'm Andrew Horowitz. I am a certified financial planner. I'm the founder of an investment advisory firm called Horowitz & Company. You know what we do. We are there for you, helping you with your finances. We're here every single week to get you more information that you need to reach your personal level of financial freedom or success, whatever that may be, to help give you the insights and information that you need. So that's what we do here every week. Hopefully you've been paying attention and you have been listening intently over the last several weeks, because over the last couple of 3 weeks, I have been dipping back into the core principles of investing. I've been Not so keen on having guests on through the end of the year and to where we are now, but there's some announcements of what's happening in the next few weeks. And I thought it was really a good time to spend that and, just focus in on the tools that we need. We talked about things like diversification and what the point of it all is, emotions, and how to really tamper those down and kind of keep it so that you are investing with a process and a discipline. We understood the ideas of a couple weeks back about risk management, the importance of being in the game. That's something I've been talking about for months now. The idea that, you know, sitting on the sideline is not going to do anything for you, because while you may not lose money, you have no opportunity at all, zero, to make any money. And that's okay for some people. But you have to look at, what are your objectives? What are your goals? And if you're just sitting on the sideline, you're not getting anywhere. Matter of fact, you're going backwards. So we're going to continue this process for this week as well, talking about some of the things that you need to know, some of the things that you need to work on in order for that, we'll call it, you know, ultimate success. But we do have some guests coming up. I'll mention a few of those and tease those out to you. We have, we've been talking, Interactive Brokers has been a sponsor of ours, but I've also been looking at what a lot of people doing, a lot of articles out there about margin and margin use and leveraging a portfolio. And I thought, you know what, let's go to the top of Interactive Brokers, because we use them a lot for our clients. So I got the Executive Vice President of Interactive Brokers, Steve Sanders, and he's going to kind of fill us in on what's going on in the industry. I thought that would be really interesting. And then we have Ross Gerber coming from Gerber Kawasaki. And Ross, if you know him, we had him on, I don't even know, maybe a year or so ago. He's a big advocate of Tesla and some other really interesting ideas in the world of investing. And I thought I'd get him back to talk about some of his ideas and what's going on. And then we have, following that, Anthony Pompliano on the area of cryptos. Because, I mean, listen, you know my feeling on cryptos and where we are with that in terms of is it really an investment or is it a store of value? Well, we're going to get to the bottom of some of this. So we have plenty of good stuff we will draw out from all of these guests coming up over the next few weeks. Now, last week, we discussed the area of emotions, right? Do you remember that? We talked about the whole idea of emotions can get in the way and you kind of, you know, get the FOMO and all this. And we have these stories that I talked about how, you know, people were doing things for the wrong reasons. Remember the CPA I talked about how, well, he was not desirous of being in the market because of valuation, but, oh, he was thinking about buying Tesla. And we kind of got into this discussion about the speculative nature of what we're seeing in the markets. And at the same time, it's not something necessarily to be scared about. It's something to be embraced and understood. I think really understood is the most important part of that. It doesn't mean you have to participate in it. It does not mean that you need to get involved in something that makes you uncomfortable, but you need to understand it. And I got to tell you, with all the things that we talked about, I'm really happy that many of you have written me and told me over the last few months of the success that you're having and that you've gained confidence in what you're doing from what you heard right here. That's what this is all about. That's what we're trying to accomplish, to provide you that education, to give you the confidence to do what you need to do. Because like anything else, confidence. It's an important concept. It's really the word that you really need to have when it comes to investing, because that's really what it's all about. Because the markets are all about confidence. It's a big confidence game if you really think about it. If you think of times of uncertainty and you think about what goes on, I mean, what happens, right? What goes on actually there? We have a loss of confidence that the results are going to be anything but terrible. And people lose confidence. They lose confidence that there's going to be a guarantee on something. They lose confidence that they're going to have opportunity on something. They're going to lose confidence that they're going to have money in their investments because they see all these people pulling money out of investments. We may lose confidence in a company because maybe a CEO has had some kind of indiscretion or inability to really work within the times and keep up with the times. Look about the confidence that we saw that dropped in favor of AMD as opposed to Intel. Or maybe there are bigger issues out there. Maybe there are something that's not right with the economy or war or the politicians. And that lack of confidence, that concern that is brought over when it's not just from one person, but it really spreads out dramatically, can absolutely drive a stake right through the heart of prices of bonds and stocks and commodities and cryptos, whatever you want to look at. And if you think about it for a second, this concept of confidence is really important, because have you ever wondered why the Fed and government officials, for example, or Larry Kudlow, he's a great example, never seem to have any kind of negative talk and never look at the negative side of anything. They talk about all the good things. All of their words are carefully crafted in a way to keep confidence up, or maybe to confuse. Now, it's interesting because we have a much different situation now. Now, with Vice President and President-elect Biden coming to office and talking about the dark winter and difficult times and talking about he's going to be, you know, straight and transparent and provide all of this information and discussing on a relatively constant basis this idea of sitting at the table in the empty chair and these pretty negative images that come up. As opposed to what we saw previously, which always was, not only was the glass half full, it was always full. Things are going to be better. Things are better. Things are going to be great. We're going to change this. Don't worry about this. It's only a small item. You know, that's what we had before. Now, all of a sudden, we have the end of the world is near. And you have to wonder what kind of concern you're going to have for the level of confidence when it comes to the markets. Now, so far, we've only had one or two major speeches and discussions since the official election count has been completed. Next week, we have the inauguration, of course, and then Biden becomes president. Now, whether the question is going to be, is he going to continue down this road of sharing a lot of negative thought to try to spook people? Probably not going to be the best thing. He may do this for a while. Once and if markets react negatively to it, they'll change their tune dramatically. But confidence comes from our leaders. Confidence comes from the underlying guarantees. Currency, for example, is a perfect example. Perfect example of confidence. Sovereign bond markets are all based on confidence or backed by the full faith and credit of fill in the blank. I kind of grabbed a couple of definitions here I thought was interesting, because when we think about the currency markets, we think about the bond markets, and I'm talking about sovereign currency, et cetera. You know, I'm talking about not cryptos, of course. I'm talking about the base currencies, the dollars, yens, euros, et cetera. When you think about that, you think about the bond market, the whole idea of full faith. Full faith and credit is an unsecured method of backing debt based on trust and reputation. So that's where that confidence come in. You know, you have that confidence that, hey, I have the trust. I have the belief that the reputation is solid. Governments offer these bonds backed only by their ability to collect taxes and other revenues in the future. So again, confidence that this is going to continue, that we're going to have the ability to do so. And one of the things we know about sovereign bonds is they get rated. And when the rating companies do their job, which is usually not really ever, because everybody has an A or an A-plus rating, you know, quality, all these are the same, unless something really is going bad. It's kind of like on Wall Street when they say we have a buy rating. You know, a neutral rating really means sell. A sell meeting rating is like, oh, God, get out hard. So these bond rating agencies, you know, you have to have the highest quality or else it's really not good. Or at least one back, you know, one under. But confidence, because we have confidence that the governments theoretically have the unlimited and lawful capacity to collect revenues. And the bonds they have are often considered low risk and therefore have lower yields. So we have really high confidence that we're going to get paid back on our money. But once that confidence bubble is burst, we're fine until that happens. And as long as there is confidence that governments make good on their debts, prices will stay high. But what about, this is what I want you to think about as we go through this, what about when there's too much confidence? Overconfidence can, I think, become a problem. And I have a story that came up this week that really put this in my head. But let's take a quick moment, a quick break. Just for a moment, I want to pause and remind you of something important that we have talked about before. Interactive Brokers, you know, they have margin loan rates that they are putting out there at 0.75% to 1.59%. And the clients who utilize them can also earn extra income by lending their fully paid shares of stock and enhance their portfolio incomes. And you can join the Interactive Brokers clients from over 200 plus countries and territories around the world to invest in stocks and options, futures, funds, and bonds. It's a very large amount of options and opportunities you have there. And it's all on a global basis, global scale. You can work with them on all these from around the world. So if you want to minimize your costs to maximize your returns, you can learn more at ibkr.com/compare. Now, of course, rates are subject to change, but this 0.75 to 1.59%, there are some interesting things you could do with that. Check it out, ibkr.com/compare. Now, that story that I was telling you about, that popped into my mind this week on the idea of overconfidence. And I've seen this play out many times. I've been around the block a few times. Let me tell you, I'm not a newbie in this whole game. And I've seen it play out in many different ways over the years. As a matter of fact, I can remember back to a time when cryptocurrencies were ripping. Not now, because they're doing the same thing now. But they were ripping back a few years ago. And they were higher on a daily basis. And it was really kind of out of control. It was not just Bitcoin. It was, you name these, Dogecoin and Neo and Ripple. And all these names were just being thrown out there. Every day there was a new one coming to the market, kind of like the SPACs and the IPOs of today, and just running up. And I remember very distinctly, I was at a restaurant and I finished dinner and I was getting my car. You may have heard this story before. I went to the valet stand. I gave him the ticket. I said, hello, can I have my car? They said, sure. I waited for my car. Remember those days, by the way, when we can actually go to a restaurant? Oh, that was great times. But nonetheless, I was waiting for my car very patiently. And then I looked over and I saw four or five of the valet parking dudes kind of huddled up, hanging around, looking at their phones. And I kind of went over. I'm like, hey, what's going on? And they're like, well, we're trading cryptos. And I said, oh, okay. That moment was pretty much the peak of the crypto boom, and we saw losses of about 80% or more over the next few months. You remember that? There were some stories about, I think it was Bernard Baruch, or some different people get credit with this story, but he was getting a shoe shined, and the shoe shine boy said, hey, what do you think of this stock? And he said, okay, enough, I'm out. And I was back, you know, before the great crash in the 20s or something in the 30s. There was a lot of stories about the same kind of thing. And this is all about this idea of overconfidence that I want to bring to you, because I'm starting to smell some overconfidence again. And it's different than FOMO or speculative activity to a degree. Or maybe it's all part of the same thing. But the overconfidence is getting to a level that's kind of palpable. And once that happens, it's easy to understand when things are getting a little crazy. As a matter of fact, on Thursday of this week, I saw some stocks just go through the roof for no reason after they've been on a tear. Now, most of them turned tail and dropped very significantly on Friday. And again, we did have a down week for the markets this week, and that was nothing major, but 1.5% to 2%, depending on what it is. Small caps were up for the week. But domestically, S&P 500, Dow Jones, NASDAQ 100 down anywhere from 1 to 1.9% for the week or so. Not a big deal, nothing to be upset about. But underlying some of this, we did see the strength in the small caps, banks getting whacked, the turn on in energy from a really big move that we saw recently. And some of the go-go, momo, FOMO names, you know what I'm talking about, have really took a beating on Friday. But this overconfidence that seems to be pushing and pulling a little bit more than you would expect is kind of what I'm seeing now. Let me tell you and explain of what I'm seeing now. And the details have changed a little bit from the reality to protect some of the people involved in this. But here's the basics of this story. This is a true story. And just a couple of days ago, a young gentleman that I know, I've known him for a long time, they were telling me about a new trading chat room that he started. Okay, interesting. So he provides stock tips and ideas and charges a nominal fee for people to join. I'm like, oh, okay. He explained to me that he took $2,500 in investments and now it's worth like $5,000 after a couple of months of trading. So far good, right? So if you make 100% of your money, hey, that's good stuff. Okay, but here is more to consider on this story. This fine gentleman who has started this chat room and stock trading tip service, his real business is in the landscaping business. Nothing wrong with being a landscaper. I mean, it's an honorable, you know, job, as long as you do a good job of it. Any job is good. But, you know, he's mowing lawns and stuff. He's doing some landscaping work. thing is not that. The thing is that he has no training or experience aside from the last couple of months trading stocks on his phone, and now he's a self-proclaimed expert. He has tremendous confidence to a level of overconfidence in his abilities as a stock market expert. And as the market agrees with him more and more, he's going to commit more capital to it, trying to lever up his gains significantly. And that's where the problems come in. This combination of overconfidence and lack of skepticism. Because we always need to look around the corner and under the bed, so to speak, to think about, all right, what risk is really out there? When you're overconfident, you don't have this as part of the equation. Everything needs to be done in moderation. Because you also can't have too much skepticism. That will lead you to inaction, missing out on opportunities. Yet too much confidence leads us into places that end up being like just never-ending pits for losses. So the question is, how do we balance? I don't think there's, I know there's not just one method of doing this. Rather, we need to figure out what's a process, a balance and a process of asking questions, understanding the risk and the opportunity. A lot of what ifs. What if I'm wrong with this decision? Where is my out? And if we learn to ask the right questions and look at the prospect, I think from several different angles, and then have a plan to respond to the what ifs, we can have a much better shot at some opportunities without having the incredible downside potential that you'll often see with some of these kinds of market events. Now, this is a bit of a different discussion from the idea of long-term investing, where you're going to buy something and hold it for a long period of time, like, let's say, a diversified mutual fund that you may hold for months or years. But it's also part of the same discussion, because here we're kind of looking at swing trades and opportunistic positioning, tactical investing. We're looking at maybe the long-term confidence and opportunities and what ifs and where I'm going to be if this happens. So I think that we need to have this game plan, but more importantly, a process. We need to have answers to questions of what ifs. And when we look at these opportunities and we look at what's out there, what could go wrong, and am I comfortable that that is something I am willing to deal with? As opposed to, yeah, I am definitely going to make double my money in a week on this, or a month or a year, whatever it is, and I'm going to put it all in there and have that level of confidence that, you know, what happens if the story doesn't play out? What happens if you're wrong? What if there is an event in the markets unrelated to this stock? What are you going to do? What if they are, something happens and there's an indiscretion about the CEO and confidence is lost, as we talked about? These are important issues that need to be thought through and asked, the what ifs. Now we're going to take another quick break, and I got to talk about some of the stimulus plan in a second here, and that's part of this discussion. I want to talk about Masterworks for a second here, because, you know, we talk about the Fed, and the Fed is committed to keeping interest rates low for how long? The foreseeable future or longer? 2023, I think they're talking about. So that means that bond yields, which are already at record low rates, will continue to stay near zero for really a long period of time. And with the stock market trading near all-time highs and records, sophisticated investors are looking to take some chips off the table, right? So where should you put some of your hard-earned wealth? Well, according to a new report from City Private Bank, contemporary art returned 13.6% per year over the last 25 years. Compare that to 8.6% per year for the S&P 500. Art also has a lower loss rate than gold, with almost no correlation to the stock market. Masterworks.io is the first and only platform that allows you to invest in blue chip art from artists like Monet and Basquiat. And recently, Masterworks.io sold their first Banksy masterpiece. Listen to this. Banksy, it sold for a 32% return net of fees to investors. Now, to learn more, head on over to masterworks.io and use the promo code TDI to skip the 15,000-person wait list. Again, that's masterworks.io, promotion code TDI. See important information and disclaimers at masterwork.io/disclaimer. So let's move it on over and talk about, I think we need to talk about stimulus. There's plenty for everyone in this deal, right? This new stimulus plan, $1.9 trillion that is looking like it's going to be let out there. A lot of questions that have come up, and maybe you got to wonder why the market was not acting more favorably, because the plan is pretty rich, pretty fluffy, lots of money in there, and lots of money for a lot of people. But I think what happened was there was a miscommunication, a misfire, misunderstanding. I don't know how you want to look at it, but we're talking $1.9 trillion. One of the key ideas was to send out money in direct payment checks to enhance what was sent out previously, just recently, the $600. Now, this discussion that was out there was all about, well, we're going to put out this $2,000 check to everybody as part of this next stimulus package. Everybody was rah-rah all for it. Well, when I heard about that, I thought, well, everybody got $600 already. They're just going to enhance it, and they're going to give out another $1,400 for those that qualify, or some component of that, depending on income levels, et cetera. So I think there was some misunderstanding, because a lot of people thought when this came out that they were going to put $2,000 per person that qualifies inside of the program, but it's actually going to be $1,400. You may say, big deal. What's the big deal? I mean, we got 600 and another 1400 is coming, and it was, but if the thought in the markets were, and retail stocks and people thought that we're getting another $2,000, again, it's a big difference versus the 1400 that's coming. So I think that kind of laid on markets a little heavy over the last several days. But I think anybody who thought that the discussion about $2,000 was not actually $2,000 wasn't thinking too clearly. And that's where I think this market is right now. It's kind of like really fluffy. Well, at least the sentiment. I don't mean the markets. The sentiment is really fluffy, thinking that it's only, you know, we're just going to keep on getting gobs and gobs and gobs and gobs of money with no end in sight. Interest rates are going to stay down forever. Inflation is never going to be there. So I think that what we have right now is this basic point that we're going to get $1,400. And also, I think that there is plenty. There's more PPP money in there, extension of the eviction moratorium. There's some real money in this plan. But the question is, what's going to be the follow-up? I mean, right now, we got $2.2 trillion that was put out recently. We got $900 billion. We got another $1.9 trillion that's on the table. They're also talking about a national minimum wage rate of $15. I don't know if that's going to go through. That's going to be possibly a problem for this bill. They'll probably end up dropping that so they can just get these checks out and some of this other money. But we also have another $4 trillion plus dollars of new bond buying that recently happened. So seriously, what's the follow-up to this? Is it seems like this is as good as it gets. It could get better. There could be more money pushed out there. It's very possible. Maybe infrastructure, that's what everybody's looking for right now, this whole idea that, well, there's going to be another $1 trillion infrastructure bill. So I think that there's going to be plenty of stimulus out there, because I think that there's a reality that has set in. We are now in the middle of January. This whole thing started, you know, let's call it almost a year ago. We were supposed to be done with this. I mean, we are going on our first year anniversary into the second year, and it doesn't look like really is any let up. In fact, there's some really spooky dooky conversations from some people like former FDA director Scott Gottlieb, how we're going to have this. And I think even Fauci, how we're going to have this forever. This virus is going to be around forever, which I don't see that's, think that's that untrue. But the question is, it may not have any impact, right? That's what we're looking for. Looking for these vaccines to have an impact. But even if we get the vaccine delivery process ironed out, which it is not, there are months and months, probably till the summer, at least until all vaccinations are completed. And we're not even talking about this whole idea of strains and mutations, and I'm not even going there. And I've said before, 2021, what is it? Kind of the same, but different. It's the same because we're pretty much still a lot of people locked down, locked up, stay at home, working from home, distancing, etc. But it's different because there's some hope and a different level of hope that's on the horizon. And I think that's kind of something to really, consider. I think, though, that when we look at what's going on, we have to realize that while we are seeing that the initial claims that came out last week towards the million person initial claims per week newly filed is creeping back to levels that were, back in April. We're getting better for a while, but post-retail season, and I think there was some census employees that were probably laid off, and all of the things that go into the process of this lockdown that seem to be spreading around, and not to mention the global lockdown, the euphoria that's in the markets that is really predicated on the amount of stimulus that comes through. I think it has to be tempered a little bit. Now, I'm not telling you that markets are bad, not telling you markets are good. I think there are great opportunities, by the way. I think we have some great opportunities. That's why we invest in some of the inflation protection areas and looking at them as opportunistic moving forward for both our investology and our managed and our global allocations, and how, for example, we're looking at things like, tips. We're looking at specific areas around the world and looking at very specific managers for our emerging markets and looking at non-dollar denominated investments that may benefit, because if we are going to have this long haul of either a forever virus, which I find hard to believe, by the way, or at least what we think that will be reasonable if you do just a back of the napkin calculation, we're probably talking about after the summer of 2021, after the summer, post-summer, we're talking about September, when maybe we could roll out all the vaccinations here in the United States. Then there's a question about around the world. That's a whole different discussion, because we still may have borders that are shut down for a period of time if, in fact, we don't have the level of vaccination around the world to prevent it from coming back. And, of course, there's those, no vaccine people and anti-vaxxers, those that are just going to stand on ceremony. But then, of course, we have the other battle that we're going to have and starting to bubble up. The whole idea of requiring some kind of, we'll call it a vaccine passport, to go to the movies, to travel on a plane, especially internationally. It's happening already. To maybe go state to state, maybe to go to a concert, maybe to go to a restaurant. This is all happening right now, and a lot of people are going to fight that. Now, even though we all have mobile phones, and even though that mobile phone tracks us all the time, you know it does. And even though we try our best, maybe, to stay off social media, which, by the way, does some tracking and algorithms to figure us out, we're okay with that somehow. But no. We're also okay with having a driver's license in order to drive a car, and we're also okay to have a passport to travel around the world. Somehow that's okay. That's accepted. But the thought of having some kind of a stamp of approval that I got the vaccine and therefore I am quote unquote clear is, oh my God, the government is tracking me. So let's stop for a second and figure that if we want lives to be back to normal, or some sense of whatever that new normal is, or at least getting at least close to what we have had in the past, well, we're going to have to do something. So it's going to be a while. And as I said, 2021, same but different. Earnings season. Earnings season is starting. And we saw some of the banks and financials come out with their numbers. Wells Fargo got smacked pretty good. One of the reasons that the headline numbers were much better on many of these companies, because we saw that they actually beat. JP Morgan had a great number. They beat on headline and they beat on revenue. One of the big reasons is they released some of their loan loss provisions. And that beat, as compared to expectations, was obviously kind of wacko. You know, one of the things about banks, it's impossible to try to look at their headline numbers or even second level deep numbers and try to figure out what's going on with if they did well or not. They are masters at hiding and disguising and creating, I would say, a messy but yet fileable quarterly. And what we're seeing now is, first blush, everybody was really excited. Pre-market, things are up. Then everything started selling off, all the banks off pretty hard for the day on Friday as the earnings came out, because there was a realization that the only beat they really had was due to the fact that there was this release of some of the loan loss provisions. And I find that really interesting, and I've talked about this before several times, because the release of the loan loss provisions seemed to be very much too fast. In other words, while the banks are making money and a lot of the money is being pushed into the banks by the Fed to make sure they're whole and their balance sheets are in good order, I still wonder about the moratorium on evictions and what's going to happen with the mortgage payment delays that were going on. I mean, how is that going to affect that? And then not to mention all of the potential problems they'll have in commercial real estate, as we see that there has been a significant move from city centers to other places, and this work from home is not really pushing new building growth. So the losses that could be starting to occur that could snowball in places like New York and San Francisco and LA and Chicago, this is a really big concern. Because if you think about what companies will try to do in this kind of environment, they will try their best to figure out a way to save as much money as possible. And if real estate is on the chopping block, so to speak, if we are going to see that real estate is coming down and not being rebuilt, what are the alternatives and how are the banks going to pay for that? In other words, pay for the fact that they don't have those loans outstanding and they may be a problem. Or maybe have to take a shortcut on some of the loan payments that are outstanding for many of the companies that are going bankrupt. And I don't even think we've seen the wave of bankruptcies that we're going to see over the next year yet really hit. But yet somehow two things happen. The Fed says, hey, banks, it's okay. You can start doing more buybacks and dividends. And then the banks are like, okay, Fed's got our back. You know what? We're going to release some of these loan loss provisions. So I don't know. Seems a little bit weird to me, but the losses that they had really pushed up and created some really pretty numbers for the banks right now. And even with these high levels of employment and big money in the system, it's going to find its way through the bank. So maybe there's something to be said, you know, with that. All right. We have some listener questions, or actually some more listener comments. Let me grab these. We have three different questions / comments that I'll go through with you. This one, actually, we got this in last week. Yeah, within a week. And I think some of the answers to this came out already in the markets. You could always write to me on comments or questions, anything you want on the show maybe, or I'll answer you personally. Go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com and you could check out on the top right, there's something that says Ask Andrew. Click on the Ask Andrew button and there you go. Voila. You can just ask away. Also, the show notes for this episode, go over to The Disciplined Investor, episode number 697. There are plenty of show notes in place for you to click all sorts of things to find out more of what's going on, some of the things that we talked about. So this question comes in from Robert G. He says, hi, Andrew. You asked for questions, so I decided to take you up on that. Uncertain times bring opportunities. So if you like your take on Intel, I'd like your take on Intel. I believe it's a value play at multiple is discounted to the industry because Intel has been losing market share left and right to the likes of AMD and TSM. Yeah, Taiwan Semiconductor. We talked about that earlier, the AMD confidence issue. Sure, Intel is playing catch-up, but the reason I'm invested in Intel is that they have big plans to use the proven dependability of their chips into the shift into IoT, Internet of Things, and 5G, and Intel is a domestic manufacturer in an industry pressured by security concerns. So on that, you know, the big move that we saw over the last week, which is interesting because Intel had a terrible number on the recent earnings, and it really just everybody was really down on Intel for 150 different reasons. Everybody was selling out on it, but we had a major CEO change, didn't we, this week? And the reality that we saw that, and on the heels of activist investors getting involved, that really helped out the company. I do believe that Intel has some great stuff, but you know what? There has to be a new team, which seems like it's happening, and a new direction, which also seems like it's happening. So I think that Intel is a great company, just really screwed up a bit under the current management. He said, I'd like to sneak in another question. You got a twofer here. If bond prices move inversely to interest rates, does that suggest that the Treasury bond prices really only have no way to go but down, as near zero interest rates can only go up from here, especially if inflation rises strongly? That's an interesting question, because the answer to your question is no. And the reason for that is illogical. And there's something that one part of this that I think you forgot about, or I'll tell you about. And that is that, yes, if interest rates are zero, theoretically, if that was the lowest that they can go, prices can go no higher. However, there is the idea of negative interest rates. We see that in Japan. We see that in Europe and some other areas around the world. The Fed thus far has said, you know what, we're not going to do that. Okay, they say a lot of things. But with your theory, I would agree. I would agree that if interest rates are near zero, that there's really not much upside. But the question is, do the markets believe that is all that is left? Or if we get into another sticky financial situation, that there will be a negative interest rate and that would push bond prices up more? I know it sounds asinine and crazy and off the rails that this is even a possibility to discuss negative interest rates. But we even saw a negative rate on or price on oil not too long ago, which has rallied since March, like $90 per barrel from a negative 40 to about, you know, close to almost 48, 50, whatever it is now. Yeah, 52 right now. Next question, Allison T. Hey, Andrew, I'm 23 years old. I graduated college last year. First generation in my family. Well, congratulations. That's awesome. After almost a year of being unemployed, yeah, I started my first full-time job last month. During work, I started looking for a podcast that could guide me on how to maximize and invest my finances. The title of your podcast caught my attention. I listened, and I started listening religiously. Thank you, Allison. I've recommended your podcast to friends. Can you do a podcast that explains in detail what, when, and where to start for someone like my age and background? We could do that. I think we've done a lot of those in the past. And I have a book out there that I think my second book, and I had a podcast too that did that. I'll put that in the hopper. I'm going to circle that right now about doing that. A basics podcast. We'll do that. Thanks for the question, Allison. And keep listening. And congratulations to you on your college and your new job and everything. And I'm sure you're making your family super proud. That's awesome. Robert K. Andrew, this is a long one. Many thanks for putting out an excellent podcast every week. I know it must be a lot of work, but I'm sure that many people like me really appreciate it. Well, thank you. And yes, it is a good amount of work. I do not have a question, but I would like to comment on your last podcast. Uh-oh. All right, here we go. I was surprised that the CPA who thought that the market was too expensive wanted to buy Tesla. Talk about a stock that is way overvalued. The question is whether or not will crash, but when will it? I would have just reminded him that the following words of wisdom from Pat Dorsey from Morningstar in his book, The 5 Rules from Successful Stock Investing. The real cost of losing money is much worse than the opportunity cost of missing gains on page 154. I'm a little bit, by the way, side note, I'm a little bit in between that. I think there's opportunity and, you know, it's kind of not binary. Pat Dorsey also points out that to be successful in stock investing is very similar to being successful in playing tennis. The player who makes the least mistakes is the player that typically wins, which is exactly what we talked about tonight. The what ifs asking today with the what ifs, the questions, the plan, right? That's what we talked about. Now, I spent more time focusing on making fewer mistakes. Whenever I miss an opportunity like Tesla or Spotify, I just say, oh, well, and look for another opportunity in the market. I know that they're out there. I wish I did that earlier. My returns would have been much better. From Rob, I think you're right on with this. And this is a great commentary to go along with exactly what we've been talking about. The commentary and what we've been saying about how there is the opportunity and confidence and using some questions and discipline and process to get yourself where you want to be. But I agree that this comment, I'll read again, the quote, the real cost of losing money is much worse than the opportunity cost of missing out on gains. Yes, I do agree with most of that, but at the same time, I want to state this and restate this and emphasize it. I don't think it's a binary discussion. Because as you know, it doesn't mean you have to invest in everything. You have to find the right things to invest in. And as you say, not making mistakes or having your mistakes not really hurt you as much. I think that's the summation of all of this, right? That makes sense. All right, so thanks for your questions. Thanks for being there. As I mentioned, we have a lot of great guests coming up over the next number of shows. Steve Sanders coming up next. We got Ross Gerber. And we have Anthony Pompliano coming on. That should be an interesting show because I have a lot of questions for him. Send in your questions for any of those guests as well, the same way that we did it right now. Hey, listen, thanks so much for joining me this week and every single week. I really appreciate you being there, your support. Anything you need from me, I am here for you. Let's make it happen. Let's go out there and have the confidence in what we should. Ask the questions, the what ifs, and make sure that we are doing what we can to find the right place to get ourselves towards disciplined investing for our future. That's what it's all about. Thanks for joining me. I'm going to see you again next week. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.